I'm excited about the paperback version of Darwin's Doubt because the publishers allowed me to write a chapter responding to the main critics of the book. And I think this is exciting because it's really going to advance the debate.
So says Stephen Meyer, the author of the explosive New York Times bestseller Darwin's Doubt, which is now being released in an expanded paperback version. In Darwin's Doubt, Meyer lays out the amazing scientific evidence for intelligent design at the dawn of animal life. And he reveals the debates going on among top scientists about Darwin's theory, debates that the mainstream media ignore. Darwin's Doubt has just been released in paperback with a brand new chapter. Get Darwin's Doubt today at darwinsdoubt.com. That's darwinsdoubt.com.
Hello and welcome to ID the Future. I'm Casey Luskin with Discovery Institute's Center for Science and Culture. And we have today back on the show with us Doug L., who's going to continue a conversation about his new book, Counting to God, A Personal Journey Through Science to Belief. Doug is an attorney in Washington, D.C., who holds degrees from MIT and the University of Maryland in math and science. As we discussed in our previous podcast, he has a personal story that I don't know if I would say that it is unusual, but it's great in that you have documented it and backed it up very well. A story where he started off sort of as a religious believer and then because of science and those sorts of factors drifted away from belief in God. And then because of the scientific evidence, when he discovered the evidence for intelligent design, came back to believe in faith. He's now written a book about his story. We're going to continue this podcast where we left off previously talking about some of the evidence that Doug cites for intelligent design and against Darwinian evolution. You have a great table in your book that I think was very helpful in summarizing the issue when it comes to biological evolution. And that table summarizes some of the predictions of neo-Darwinian evolution versus fact and what the evidence really says. What are some of the predictions which you think pose problems for Darwinian evolution?
Well, there are quite a number of them. In my book, I give a table with six of them and then explain each of them in the text. Three of them relate to the fossil record. You mentioned Darwin's Doubt by Dr. Stephen Meyer, and I think he destroys Darwinian evolution in his book just based on the fossil record alone. The Cambrian explosion of 541 million years ago, all of a sudden there's all these new life forms, new body designs. There's also no fossil record of transition organisms. This Darwinian theory is that, well, there was this creature, and accidents happen, and some of the accidents were good, and it got a little better here, and it got a little better here. And before you knew it, you had all these complex systems coming into existence. You know, the backbone, the eye, the brain, and so forth for every species on Earth, and there are millions of species. Well, all these little bit better organisms aren't in the fossil record. But the two facts I find that in the table I found most convincing relate to so-called junk DNA and then a concept called orphan genes. So if I could, Casey, I'd just like to explain each of those a little bit. So Darwinian theory predicted that there were accidents and this part of DNA hit this part of DNA and produced new code that somehow miraculously was the exact right code to produce new parts in our bodies, new proteins. And so that theory predicts, well, there's a lot of junk out there because obviously you put it all together. It doesn't always work perfectly. Mathematically, you'd show that it almost never works perfectly. But anyhow, Darwinian theory was that there's some good stuff in there. Well, as you know, Casey, in September 2012, this group of 450 distinguished scientists worldwide called the ENCODE Project published 30 major papers in major scientific journals worldwide that basically said that at least 80% of our DNA serves some purpose, and it's likely 80% will go to 100%, said their lead researcher, and therefore destroying the concept of junk DNA. They came back in December 2012 and said, hey, by the way, there's more than one code in our DNA. There's multiple levels of information. Shortly after that, they were, of course, besieged by atheists saying, you did your science wrong. You don't know what you're talking about. They came back in 2014 with a paper that says, look, we hear your objections. We're still learning more about DNA, but we stick by our original findings. So that's pretty powerful, Casey. That's not far off religious group. That's 450 scientists worldwide with no religious agenda. Let me talk about orphan genes. If I had to identify, you know, Casey, just one area of science that most strongly supports belief in God, I would call it orphan genes. So A gene is a section of DNA that's the code for a particular machine part called a protein. And Darwinian theory says, well, it got a little bit better here, a little bit better. Gradually, one gene transforms into another stretch of coding, DNA that works, and so on and so on. But what scientists have found, for every species studied to date, scientists have found stretches of coding DNA, new genes, that doesn't relate to any other organism. It's not related to other code, and sometimes this coding for new organism is unique. The code to build toxins for jellyfish, the code to prevent polar cod from freezing, and so on. And sometimes there's overwhelming number of these orphan genes, this new coding. And here's the thing, if I could just give you a few minutes on one of the main pitches in my book, Casey, and that is, where does information come from? How can you get coding by accident? Have you heard this thing that, well, the monkey types at random and sooner or later it'll type out the complete works of Shakespeare?
Sure, of course.
Okay, so people think that's sort of how you get coding DNA. With a little multiplication, you can realize that's a pretty far-fetched concept. I mean, if every particle in the universe was a monkey typing, and that monkey could type as fast as theoretically possible under the laws of physics so that they could type a volume of books equal to a sphere 90 million miles in radius, the Earth's orbit to the sun, every second for the life of the universe, 14 billion years, every particle in the universe was typing like that. It's unlikely you'd get more than 100 specified letters. So if you start off with anywhere in any of those books from any of those monkeys slash particles, you can't get any meaningful amount of information by chance. And yet, in every organism, every species that's ever existed that's been tested, people have found enormous amounts of new information injected into the universe. I mean, human beings have over 50, they call them orphan genes, I call them designer genes, related to our mental processing, our brains. And I mean, everybody agrees, no matter how you want to look at it, that human beings weren't around 10 million years ago. Probably, possibly, you know, modern human beings, depending on various theories, much sooner. So where did this new information come from in the universe? So the last item in my table is orphan genes. I find this scientific discovery so amazing.
Well, I can say that you are warming the heart of Paul Nelson, who agrees with you that orphan genes are a major problem for Darwinian theory and that they pose, I think, an insurmountable obstacle to evolutionary explanations. I want to close this up as far as the science goes with a little conversation about what I think was a really fun part of your book. You have a really interesting discussion of quantum mechanical effects and how they show that there must exist some reality outside of space-time. What are some of these effects and why do they bring you to that conclusion?
Well, thanks, Casey. So my book is called Counting to God. In it, I count through seven areas of science. And you know, as I say in my book, if you can count to seven, you can count to God. I make it pretty simple. And then the last count, seventh count, is quantum physics. And I just go through three universally accepted experimental results. The one that shows that there's a reality outside of space and time is something called quantum entanglement. And the basic idea is you get two subatomic particles. Physicists are able to do that. They put them in the same state so that they're exactly alike in all respects, okay? Then you separate them. And this has been done as far as 88 miles apart in the Canary Islands. And when you change one, the other is changed instantaneously. What's really weird about that is that this happens faster than the speed of light. And that's been proven many times scientifically. I mean, we're talking really instantaneously. People who know quantum physics will tell you that that means there's got to be something outside of space and time. No effects in space and time can happen faster than the speed of light, yet these particles are somehow connected. That's pretty amazing.
That is really bizarre and almost spooky stuff. And I know that quantum physicists marvel at some of the effects that they see. And I think you're right. And you actually quote some mainstream scientists to talk about how this points to, as you put it, or as you quoted, I think a scientist, there must exist some reality outside of space-time. So I want to close this up, Doug, with a quote from your book. You write that, quote, "Powerful institutions, most colleges and universities, newspapers, magazines, and television and movie producers want you to believe that our universe is meaningless and pointless, a grand system where everything arose by accident and with no purpose or design, but somehow miraculously gives the appearance of design. Their stature is enhanced by this empty yet popular paradigm. To these powerful institutions, there is no greater reality. Religion is generally tolerated, but only in the sense that people should be free to do whatever makes them feel good, and only if there is no pretension that religion or a greater reality have any role in explaining the creation of the universe, life, or human beings. Okay, that was a nice little, I think, summary of what you personally have seen and experienced during some of your time in academia. You then write that, quote, "the great debate is far from over," unquote. So how did we get to this point today, Doug? And where do you think the debate is going to go in the future?
Well, that kind of sums it up, Casey. I agree. You know, it's interesting. Back in the early 1800s, what we call intelligent design was universally accepted by all thinking people, I would say. People said that, "I believe in two books, the Bible and the Book of Nature," was a common quote in the 1800s. People became scientists to learn how God did things. And then, as you know, 1859, Darwin publishes On the Origin of Species and this theory that, well, the accidental changes will explain everything. And bottom line is a lot of people don't want to believe in God. They saw that as a way out, and it's multiplied over the last 150 years. It's been accepted, and we live in a very materialistic culture that wants to shut out God. What I find so exciting is that, as I see it, the evidence from multiple areas of science, cosmology, biology, planetary formation, quantum physics, all supports belief in God, belief in a designer. And some of these discoveries are just in the last few years, like the ENCODE discovery that we talked about in 2012. So I think this debate is going to continue. It's hard for me to think of a more important subject.
Well, I agree with you that the debate is going to continue, but I'd like to think, as you put it, given that all the evidence is accumulating in favor of design and challenging materialistic explanations, that we are going to see more and more science. We are already seeing more and more scientists coming over to the ID viewpoint. But obviously, as you know, Doug, that comes at a risk and a cost for a lot of folks. People have had their careers ruined, and they've lost a lot of their stature in the scientific community when they've sort of come out in favor of intelligent design. So I'd like to think that as more and more people do that, it's going to be easier for scientists to have the courage and the confidence that they can switch their views on this topic. But Doug L., thank you very much for your time and for writing the book, Counting to God, A Personal Journey Through Science to Belief. I want to commend our ID the Future listeners to check out the book. The website is www.countingtogod.com. And so, Doug L., thank you so much for coming on the show with us and talking about your new book.
Thank you, Casey.
I'm Casey Luskin with ID the Future. Thanks for listening.
This program was recorded by Discovery Institute Center for Science and Culture. ID the Future is copyright Discovery Institute 2014. For more information, visit www.intelligentdesign.org or www.idthefuture.com.